As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer Show and our latest batch of US soccer themed listener questions. On today's show, we're looking at whether the USMNT coaching gig can attract a bigwig, whether Ralph Rangnick should do the trick, how the national team will shape up at the Gold Cup, and we explore the USMNT's chances of making the World Cup Final Four. My name's Ryan Bailey. That's right, the Brooklyn Basher is back, baby. Joining me today, a man who's delighted that Qatar are reportedly in talks to take an investment in Tottenham Hotspur, Taylor Rockwell. How are you? Good news, everybody.
Oh, lovely news to start the day. I did have two different Tottenham supporters text me to ask, like, how should I feel about this? And I said, to each their own, but I would be bummed. Because I would be bummed, but I'm not bummed because Ryan Bailey is back. There we go. Back on track. Good to see you, Ryan.
So it's a bittersweet day for you then, Tater.
Yeah. I mean, I got no particular love for Tottenham one way or the other, but I think... probably exciting that there will be money to be spent if you are a long-suffering Tottenham fan, similar to what we talked about with Newcastle. I'm guessing that there will be some joy there. But then there is the also ever-present question of who is actually in charge and why did they buy this club and what's the goal behind it? So I guess you can be of two minds if you are a Spurs supporter.
Everything's great. Everything's great. Also joining us, Taylor, a man who sometimes gets angry when watching the USWNT play. Arizona Joe Lowry, please tell us why. Is it because you're a bigot? Please don't tell us because of that.
Somebody didn't read the article and just read the tweet to the article, Ryan Bailey. No, I mean, I wrote this article for Backfield. Also, it's good to have you back, Ryan. And I'm glad that you listen to the episodes because that was like a reference that I don't think we shared with you. Ryan always comes back from a trip or from vacation or whatever, having listened up and done his homework and jumps right back into things. So I respect you for that, Ryan. No, I wrote this article about the U.S. women's team and about how much they just sort of play below their ceiling. And I wrote and analyzed all the reasons why. You can go read that on backheel.com. And it makes me angry because the team is so good and could be so much better. And I just don't think Vlatko is super good at his job. That's kind of my overarching takeaway right now. That makes me angry, Ryan.
Well, I'm glad it's not because you hate women or anything. So I'm glad to hear that, Joe. Wow. And very much would enjoy checking out that article on backheel.com. Listeners should do the same thing. Rounding out Alpaca Man, who's a renegade maverick who takes the law into his own hands. Our very own vigilante justice seeker, Graham Ruthven.
Hello, Ryan Bailey. It's good to have you back. You have been anointed the Brooklyn Basher, so I believe now you are my security guard. You should be here any moment, I presume, to serve at my request. Yes,
I'm not coming to Scotland anytime soon. No.
Oh, not even to keep me safe. Disappointing. Yeah. Disappointing.
Who of the four of us do we want in a break-in scenario? If there had been a break-in in Brooklyn, who do we want wielding the bat?
Taylor.
Engaging the
Taylor,
intruder?
Yeah. Taylor, yeah. I've seen Taylor play fives. He'll just run after them for 2 hours.
Graham, I haven't shared this with the group. When I returned, I went the holidays back to the UK. When I returned to Rome this past weekend, we had a giant smashed window as well. It looked like there might have been a break-in attempt here. Maybe the same crew who cased your place as well.
It's TSS being targeted. Joe, Taylor, Watch out.
Maybe so. Maybe so. But I informed
a better
our landlord.
Podcast would have had somebody knock on the door just then and really, really ratchet up the drama. Sadly, nothing.
Indeed, indeed. We can't even do that in post now. Yeah, Graham, the broken window here, I alerted our landlord immediately, who sort of did the text equivalent of shrugging and said, maybe next week I'll come look at it. Cool, 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 cool. Great, great, great. Awesome. Everything's cool.
All right. Ryan's back in Italy, everybody.
I am back and feeling good. If it's a little drafty in here, you know why now. We've got plenty of US-themed listener questions to get through. Why don't we get straight to it, gents, with one from What's the Frequency, Kenneth Seiden. Hello, Kenneth. How are you? Has the USMNT job suddenly become less attractive to potential candidates, asks Kenneth. Taylor, this is a pretty crucial point for the US soccer program, you could argue. The next 3.5 years, we'll call it, with the Gold Cup coming up, a Copa America, quite likely, and a World Cup cycle, which is a pretty important World Cup coming up. So it's a very important time to have a very suitable man or person in this position. And there are lots of candidates going around out there. Are they deterred from this job at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the same job it's always been. That's my take. I welcome Graham and Joe and yourself, Ryan, to disagree. I do think if you have maybe unfair expectations or overhyped expectations of what this squad should be or how they should be playing, then maybe there is some consternation as to why there aren't bigger names linked or more bigger names actively pursuing the gig. But I think it's kind of a known job at this point. You're not going to win the World Cup, but you're going to get a group of players or a pool of players that is talented and will work very hard and will be very good in CONCACAF. And you can sort of be that manager that maybe pushes them to that next level. But that feels more like a veteran job than a young upstart sort of job. I don't think it's the gig. If you're Zidane and you're choosing between, I mean, not that he has the France option, but let's say like if Italy offered him the gig, Brazil and the United States, one of those is not like the other two. And so I think in that way,
do you
it's
mean
not
Italy
going
on qualifying? Is that what you
exactly
mean?
That's right. The one I'm referring to. I think it's just it's not going to be as massively appealing for a big name manager because you don't have that major continental competition. The Gold Cup is not the same as the Copa America or the Euros. And you're not going to like be very likely to go deep in the World Cup. And so in that way, you don't have World Cup qualifying either. So I think it's not as desirable for big, big name candidates, but I think it's still desirable for the people for whom it would have been desirable a year or two or three or four ago.
Joe, what do you think on the desirability index? Has the job increased on the index or decreased at the moment? Do you think it is viable for a big name, a Zidane, or even a Bielsa I've seen thrown around in the candidates list at the moment?
I do think it's viable for a big name. So I don't know exactly the context of Kenneth's question here. The only thing I can think of is that maybe there's a tie-in with the recent news that broke about the Reina family and the Berhalter family and all of the drama that's gone down there. And in sort of what it reveals about U.S. soccer, right, and how maybe troublingly interconnected that stuff is. So in my mind, maybe that's the thing that Kenneth is referring to that makes this job a little bit less attractive. But I would wager that nothing that's happened would have a massive impact. I think it could have a slight impact, but I'm not sure it's going to have a big change on things. There's kind of two ways to look at this job, right? The first way is, man, this team has a ton of potential, and as a manager of it, I have the chance to be the face of the primary host of what will be the biggest World Cup ever. That is appealing. That should be an appealing offering to a soccer person. The other way to look at it, though, is that this is a middling national team with really a lack of high-profile competitive games until, what, a year and a half from now? The Copa America in 2024, if even that? And so you could look at it one of those two ways. In reality, I think both of those ways are accurate. Both of those views are accurate. The question is, which manager or managers will value the first point, the potential of the team, the chance to be the face of this whole operation? Which ones will value that over, you know what, this isn't a team that's likely to win the World Cup. This isn't a team that is going to be playing a ton of really meaningful games. I might be a little bit bored between now and 2026. I don't know who's going to weigh what in what ways, but Ryan, I do think there will be someone out there, a high-profile manager or two, that is intrigued by this job. The challenge is timing. I don't think it's going to be soon. I don't think it's going to be before the end of the club season in Europe, certainly. It might even be longer than that. So My bet is that it's going to be Anthony Hudson, who is the one of Berhalter's assistant coaches, now is the interim head coach. I think he's going to be the manager until maybe the summer, maybe even past the summer. I mean, you've got the Gold Cup and the Nations League, which we'll talk about later, popping up in June, starting up in June, I believe. So I think he's going to be stewarding the team at least through the January and March windows and maybe even through June, and then we'll get somebody in who's from the outside.
Yeah, I break this question down into three separate parts. So, Joe, I also took the reference or the context from Kenneth's question in relation to the Berhalter Reyna story, which has been a whole mess after the World Cup. I think there are certainly some lessons to be learned after that whole episode, or rather when that whole episode is over, because it clearly still got some distance to run. I think the lesson is that American soccer in general needs to become a little less intertwined with itself. We talked about this last week, and the whole issue that comes from the close relationships and friendships at the top of US soccer. And there can be a benefit to that, but we are getting the messy side of things, and it's all enveloped with things like Jay Berhalter in a senior position in US soccer, and Claudio Reyna's manager at Austin FC is Josh Wolf, a close friend and former assistant of Berhalter's, and that's a little bit messy, and it's all a little bit too incestuous for an elite sporting organisation. So I think it maybe in that sense US soccer should be looking to an outsider, but in terms of whether candidates will be put off by that, I don't think so. At least if we are talking about outside candidates, Zidane didn't turn down the US job because of this. He turned it down because he wants the Brazil job or the Juventus job or something like that. And if a candidate were to get as far as really digging into what has happened here with the Reyna scandal, they'd probably think, well, I don't have friends like that at US soccer. That won't happen to me is what I think the conclusion there would be. The second part of that, of whether this job is attractive to potential candidates, is the World Cup we've just had. I think this job is more attractive to potential candidates because of that campaign. Not because the US did amazingly well. The round of 16 is pretty much where you would place this team. But I had Christmas dinner with extended family. An extended family member was talking to me about the World Cup and the US, and I wouldn't say that he's a massive soccer fan, but his summary was basically, they look like they have a good group, but they're lacking a goal scorer. And I was like, wow, that's basically a year of podcasts right there that we've done, summed up in only a few words. And I think a lot of people around the soccer world will have had the same conclusion. There is talent in this squad that you can work with for 2026. So I think it's slightly more attractive in that regard. The third part, the third breakdown, is the cycle. And Joe, you referenced this. The cycle the US is having ahead of 2026. I think that potentially could deter some candidates where the US don't have qualifiers. Yes, they've got the Gold Cup, they've got Nations League, potentially a Copa America. I guess that could change things if the US are invited to that. But the fact that the US don't have those qualifiers until 2026 just means, as Joe, you said, there is time for candidates to assess things. And maybe US soccer doesn't need to make a long-term decision this certainly in the first half of this year, maybe towards the end of the year, you're thinking, okay, you really need to be finding the guy at this point. But there's time for US soccer to assess things. So if this question is about the Reyna Berhalter story, I don't think this is putting anyone off. If it's about the job in general, I think there are plus and minuses of that position at this moment in time.
Two things for me. I'll go with the Reyna thing first. I don't think it's putting people off. My read on the situation, this is just like my speculation. I think they were probably going to renew Greg Berhalter. That's like what my gut tells me. And then I think the allegations against him are made known to Ernie Stewart while the World Cup is still going on. So then we have this investigation start. And the vibe I got from that press conference was, we want to talk about the coaching search, but we can't tell you anything about the coaching search because the investigation is ongoing and we have to see how that plays out. And I think some have taken that to mean that they are looking at other candidates. They will move on from Greg Berhalter. I took that to mean we can't really make a decision one way or the other until we know the severity of the situation. And that sounds to me like if he is cleared of wrongdoing, if they decide it's an isolated incident and we don't see it as being grounds for dismissal or grounds for future problems, then maybe the coaching search resumes, or maybe he is just appointed outright for another 4 years. But I think that has thrown a wrench into things a little bit. And so we're not getting as many names linked to the job, because right now I think it's just kind of on hiatus until things are sorted out with Berhalter and the Reyna situation there. So I do think that has maybe factored into it a little bit. So if you're wondering why we haven't heard as many names linked or why there isn't the interview process underway, I'm guessing that's a big part of it too. Graham, the question I had, the second thing I wanted to talk about, like, I hear you on the incestuous thing, which is a weird thing to write down on my notes of when is it too incestuous, question mark. That's an odd one. But that's a thing I've heard a lot, that U.S. soccer is incestuous, insidious. You've got the Berhalters. You've got the good old boy club of people who've all played together. I did enjoy the confirmation that the early 90s U.S. teams to the early 2000s teams are clearly the drama heads. They're the ones who love that drama. But also in my mind, it is pretty common in club soccer, too, that you have former players become coaches, yeah. Former players become sporting directors, become technical directors. And so in some ways, I feel like that's just normal. You tend to get that. And if anything, I feel like that's celebrated of, oh, the club is bringing back Edwin van der Sar, or they're bringing back Darren Fletcher or Eric Abidal. Like, you have these figures that are steeped in the club's traditions that then become like guiding directors for the future of the club. And so it can be a positive, but then that's where I ask you, like, do you have an idea of when it becomes too incestuous, when it becomes too much of a negative?
I don't really have a succinct answer to that. I guess it's just making a gut decision on balance. You're right. I'm not. It's very common across soccer, international and club soccer, for former players to be in senior roles. I'm not necessarily saying that U.S. soccer shouldn't have former players and people who have those close relationships. I did say there is a benefit. There's an upside to having those relationships and having those people in senior roles. But it's just down to balance, and it feels like U.S. soccer is kind of run by all the same people in a sense. You know, this person is a brother of this person, and this person is a close friend. And oh by the way, their two wives know each other from as teenagers and play in the same team. And as I say, there is a benefit to that. It's just a sense and something that I have gauged, and I don't think I'm alone in this, that it's the same kind of group of people at the top of U.S. soccer, and maybe bringing some insiders in would help.
So Graham, to get
outsiders,
to get back to Kenneth's question about whether the job is less attractive now, do you see the incestuousness as an institutional problem with U.S. soccer? Because when I was looking at this, I saw this whole soap opera, if this is what Kenneth's referring to, as a disagreement between friends, essentially, but not an institutional issue with U.S. soccer itself. So do you see it as something a bit more like this, a greater change needs to happen?
Well, Claudio Reyna is a GM of a MLS franchise. So I think that gives it a slightly different dynamic than just close friends. There is surely a professional responsibility there that Claudio Reyna has as a senior figure in U.S. soccer. He's had roles at other MLS franchises as well. Even just in fact, in terms of him being a former U.S. national team player, and not just a player, a legend, I think he has some responsibility there in his status. So I guess that's where I draw the distinction. Is it institutional? I mean, that's a bold statement to make. I don't know if I would go quite that far, but certainly I think some examination of the people that are rising to those positions in U.S. soccer would be healthy.
Graham, I think I can like find the happy middle ground here, because I hear what you're saying, and Ryan, to your question, the way I see it is like it's, I don't know if this is an institutional failing, but I think there is a failure of, for lack of a better way of putting it, like creativity. I'm going to try to be as vague as possible, but there was an anecdote here in Richmond where like the local government wanted a director of like youth outreach on social media, and they appealed to a person who was like basically in this group of people who were discussing it, and they're like, "You're young, right? Like, well, you take it over." And like that right there is the problem. It's not like we're going to do a diligent search for a person who will steer this in the direction we need to resonate with the communities that we're trying to reach. It's basically like, you're around. We know you. You could probably do it. You take it over. And that, I think, is where it starts to feel a little bit like, are you guys actually looking for different people? Are you exploring different voices, different ideas of what might be working, what might not be working? Or are you sort of going with your buddy who you played with, who was a really good coach when you guys played together? And so we think he'd be a really good technical director. That's where you don't get as much transparency, and so for me that's where it becomes just more, it's not an institutional failing, but it does feel like a little bit like a good old boy club at that point.
I think that's a good way to describe it, Taylor. I do think there's a chance that good old boys and girls club, I mean, mm-hmm. yep. could lead to institutional failure. And I'm not the best person to speak on this. I think people who are far better to speak on this have spoken and alluded to trouble sort of in U.S. soccer and the culture being a problem there. Kate Margraf is the U.S. Women's National Team general manager, works for U.S. soccer, former U.S. Women's National Team player. Brian McBride is the USMNT general manager, former U.S. Men's National Team player. Ernie Stewart is U.S. Soccer Sporting Director, former U.S. Men's National Team player. It's not difficult to piece these puzzles together, right? I mean, Taylor, everything you said, I think, holds up. That was a perfect illustration. I don't need to go any further here. You would like U.S. soccer to look and sort of just be better at finding and hiring people. I think that could apply to the U.S. Men's National Team coaching search. I know I was kind of sort of tongue-in-cheek about, you know, being angry about watching the U.S. Women's National Team earlier, but I think you could apply the same criticisms to the U.S. Women's National Team coaching search. Frankly, I think if Vlatko and what was happening right now with the women's side on the field was happening with the men's side, we would be tearing Vlatko apart, but we're not, because those things are covered differently and the number of people covering them are different straight up. And then you work your way up the ladder and there's problems here. So I don't know. We don't need to turn this into a witch hunt or anything like that. But I do think there are real issues with how U.S. soccer runs itself and how it at least hires other people.
What I heard from all of that is that Joe wants to see if Brian McBride floats. And if Brian McBride floats, then we have to ask questions about his status as a witch.
Or if he weighs the same as a duck.
Yes.
Oh boy. I was hearing that Joe wants to hire some boring administrators from other sectors. Do you want like the Petco CEO to come in and be sporting director or something, Joe?
Tim Apple.
I mean, hey.
Tim Apple. Head of US soccer.
If they can do that job, they can do the job.
All right, Kenny, thank you very much. A very interesting question there. Let's take a break. When we come back, there's more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. As we record, listener, Taylor Rockwell is in the TSS studio. He has a lovely scarf behind him that says King Peach. Taylor, is that to do with Atlanta or Georgia, or was that your nickname when you were doing the Magic Mike stage show?
I mean, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, my friend.
Nice. Very nice.
That's still his nickname.
Well, and you haven't answered the question either.
That is Atlanta United. That was a gift from Atlanta United supporters when we were down there for All-Star.
It is lovely indeed, as is your. Let's move on. Thomas Buck has asked, what will happen first? France winning another championship title or the USMNT reaching the semi-finals, presumably of the World Cup there from Thomas Buck. Joe, what do you make of this one? I think it's a very interesting question. You know, reaching the semis on home turf isn't completely out of this world. South Korea did it, after all, in 2002. Many others have done it as well.
Yeah, many teams have reached the semifinals. That's true. But about
I mean,
four
statistically
times as many
speaking,
as...
four do it every single time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's something to that. Greg Berhalter said as much. So he had I think it was a Harvard business conference on the Thursday of
his
last
weekly
week.
Symposium.
After,
oh,
he loves it.
After everything went down, and he did it. He followed through, which I do respect. And he talked about, you know, I'd like to be back with this team. The goal should be reaching the semifinals on home turf. So... that said, France, by like a mile. I think this might be the easiest question we've had in a long, long time. I think the answer is France winning a championship will happen before the U.S. reaches the semifinals of a World Cup. So I want to caveat all this by saying predicting World Cup winners or even semifinalists, I think, is a crapshoot. I think it's really hard to do, especially if the World Cup format's going to be different. It gets even harder because you lose a group stage game and you get around a 32 knockout game, and it just gets absurd at that point. We're going to see upsets. We're going to see chaos. So I'm not saying a U.S. run to the semis is out of the question, but I think it is far more likely that France go all the way and win it than it is for the U.S. to break into the established group of favorites. I mean, think about it this way. Only six different countries have won the Men's World Cup every time since 1966. That's a long time. Then you go back to 1950, and there's a seventh country, and you go back to the beginning, and eight. Only eight countries have ever won the World Cup. France is one of those eight. They are in the group of favorites. They are in the established group that is a favorite every single time. The U.S. have the potential to get there, but for me, it's just so far from guaranteed. Whereas France doing well in a World Cup and maybe at least being in contention to make that run, that is not guaranteed either, but is way closer to being guaranteed.
If I'm playing the odds and the percentages, I have to go with France winning another World Cup before the US making the semi-finals. France have made the last two World Cup finals. They have arguably the deepest squad in international soccer. Kylian Mbappe is still going to be a thing 4 years from now. Everything is in place for them to win another World Cup, while with the US, we have to project a lot more progress from them to make the semi-finals, at least if we're talking about the 2026 World Cup. A lot has to happen in a relatively short space of time. Having said that, I'm not forgetting my long-term VSP that we did a few weeks ago for the 26 World Cup, which was that a CONCACAF team will make the semi-finals. I don't really have much logic or evidence behind that. It's just kind of a gut thing. So I do have a head versus gut situation, because I could feasibly see the US making the semi-finals in 2026. It's just I reckon there's a good chance France will win that whole tournament. So I don't know where that leaves us in terms of Thomas's question. Maybe the cop-out answer to this is that both things will happen at the same time in 2026. France will win that tournament, US will make the semi-finals.
Well, US would reach the semis before France won it, technically speaking, in a linear timeline, Graham.
I think, just well, sidestepping that one neatly.
True. that is true. I had to think about that.
I think both are possible. If you're forcing us to choose one or the other, as Ryan Bailey is wont to do, I think it's just France is more of the proven entity at this point. For the United States, it requires a lot of things to align correctly and problems to be figured out. Whereas with France, let's assume Deschamps sticks around again, or even if they bring in Zidane or something, like looking at the squad they could have at the next World Cup 4 years from now, Jules Koundé would be 28. Saliba, 25. Upamecano, 28. Teo Hernandez, 29. Konate, 27. Tchouameni, 26. Gosh, he's young. Fofana, 28. Camavinga, 24. Mbappe, 28. Dembele, 29. Marcus Thuram, 29. Badiashile, 25. And Christopher Nkunku, 29. So you've still got a ton of attackers, a ton of talent. Many of those players under the age of 30. I think the only one who could be like in that conversation would be Kingsley Coman, who would be 30. So there's just so much attacking talent for France.
Giroud will still be there as well.
Who's that?
Giroud's still going to be there, definitely.
I actually kind of wondered if maybe he could be. I mean, we know what he's going to do. He can stick around. Why not? Let's keep him in there just to be the player that's sort of like, I don't know why they're including him, and then he scores five goals or something.
He'll be Nashville's top scorer by then.
That's right.
Ooh. MLS all-time top scorer by then. Let's be real. Yes, I think there's a chance the U.S. makes the semis. I think there's just as much, if not more, of a chance that France wins the title before that happens.
All right. Sounds like we are mostly decided that France are going to do it first. But thank you very much, Thomas, for that question. Let's move on to Robert Cordova's question. How does the Total Soccer Show view Sacha Clijsten's club and international career? Last week, of course, Clijsten hung up his boots after a 17-season career. He came through the 2006 MLS Super Draft, played for four MLS teams. Of course, he had a stint with Anderlecht as well. 52 national team appearances. And, of course, Graham, world-class facial hair. So how do we view Sacha's time in the game?
Well, just for the stash on its own, I'd say he's probably the greatest American soccer player of all time. I think that's a fair conclusion to draw. Clijsten, as good as his career was, so he played in Europe. He got 52 caps for the USMNT. He was a rookie of the year in MLS. He's eighth in league history for assists. He got 99 assists, which, if I were him, as impressive as that is, would really, really annoy me that he was one short of the ton, but nonetheless very impressive. Despite all that, I feel like he didn't fulfill his full potential. So let me qualify that. He was really good at Anderlecht. He was one of their best players for a period, at a time when Anderlecht were winning titles and playing in the Champions League. And at that stage, you felt like he might make that next step. And Clijsten's a player that I watched a lot of around that time. I was covering the US when they came to Europe to play games. They played a lot of games in Europe under Klinsmann, a lot of friendlies. And so, as I say, he was someone that I watched a lot. And,
Graham,
and it felt
I thought
like
you were about to say you watch the Belgian Pro League every week, because I expect you actually do.
Not entirely. Maybe if they straighten out that weird playoff system that they have at the end of the year. I've no idea how you actually win the Belgian Pro League.
Sorry, is that Scotland throwing stones at Belgium in terms of league format? Enough of that.
Didn't you all follow their format? I feel like Scotland adapted Belgium's format. I wish
Shut
they
up,
did.
Taylor. Let's not mention that. We took their format and we made it even more confusing. Theirs is the straightforward version. Anyway, I don't and have never watched much of the Belgian Pro League. But nonetheless, around that time, it felt like Kleshtin was maybe had it in him for a one other move in Europe to the Premier League or one of the bigger leagues in Europe. And of course, that next step was to the Red Bulls. And I remember Klinsmann not being very happy about that because, of course, he was all about demanding his players play in Europe where possible. And so having one of his key players, one of his first choice midfielders, move to MLS wasn't particularly pleasing to him. It probably helped prolong Kleshtin's career. But as I say, it felt like he had one more European transfer on the table. And I guess I would have liked to have seen that. So as I say, as good as his career was, I'm probably nitpicking a little bit. It felt like there was one more transfer in his career that we never got to see.
To, like, a different league?
Yeah, sure. To some other big league in Europe, to the Premier League. Or I'm not for a minute saying he was going to end up at Barcelona or Real Madrid, but you look at, you know, Tyler Adams going to Leeds and him testing himself in the Premier League, which at this point is the best league in the world. I felt like Kleshtin could have done that at some point, and unfortunately he never did.
I think Graham nailed it. I had it, if we're, like, going for the sort of abbreviated summary for Kleshtin, a properly rated European grinder and MLS baller who was always on those competitive teams in Belgium on Anderlecht, who was in the Champions League. He was the one who, when, like, there's two Americans playing in the Champions League this week, he was always one of those. Famously, there's that clash with Zlatan where Kleshtin can be seen drawing a silhouette of Zlatan's nose to point out that he has a large nose. I don't know if Zlatan had ever had that pointed out before. But to Graham's point, I think when we have players move to Belgium, especially in that era, it felt like, okay, now there's going to be that move to Germany or to a high-profile Dutch team, or maybe it is going to be to an English club. But that move doesn't happen. And I think that sort of, like, return to the United States, as Graham said, there's also, like, the amount or the frequency of his call-ups goes down under Klinsmann. He eventually comes back in, I think, in qualifying for 2018, but he's not in the 2014 World Cup roster. He's first caught up by, I think, Bob Bradley. And so it's sort of an uneven aspect of his USMNT career. I remember when he came back in and it felt like, oh, here's this sort of, at the time, underrated player who's good on the ball, who can play forward. I think there was much discussed about his ability to break lines and find passes and play vertically, and that was a thing that was lacking. And so he brought certain things to the USMNT at that point, but then that's the USMNT squad that fails to qualify for the World Cup. So I think, again, he has those 50 caps, but none of them being in a World Cup. He has so many appearances in Europe, but none of them in a league where you're going to be able to watch him regularly and see him regularly. I think that does limit how long in the memory he will be. So I think in the end, he is a player who sort of opened up some doors, I think, for Americans in Europe, but had more success in Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
And that's how I would see him.
He was part of that group after the 2014 World Cup, where MLS kind of shifted its strategy to targeting the big name US national team players. And he comes back to MLS with around roughly the same time as Dempsey. I seem to remember that being around that period. And Michael Bradley coming back from Italy to MLS as well. So maybe that would be slightly stranger now if Kleshtin was in that similar position and he comes back to MLS, because that isn't really happening with US national team players right now. But nonetheless, I would have liked to have seen more from him in Europe.
Joe, any more notes on this one?
I just loved watching Sasha Kleshtin. Like, I think he was one of the most entertaining U.S. players to watch, maybe one of the most entertaining ever. So I'll add that in. I don't disagree with anything Taylor and Graham have said about, you know, not living up to his full potential. I do think there should be some consideration given to the fact that he was a little bit early in terms of European teams really valuing American talent. He leaves Belgium in 2015. Pulisic gets to Europe and Germany, I believe, in 2015, and his senior career for Dortmund didn't start till 2016. So I think he would have been today, if Sasha Kleshtin is coming up today, he would have made that move. He would have made that move that Graham's talking about to another league, to a better league than Belgium. He just sort of was a victim of, I'm sure there's other things that were happening as well, but I think he was in some ways, you know, a victim of his own timing. But yeah, 99 assists, MLS legend in so many different ways, and I probably value that more than anybody else here because I spend more time watching Major League Soccer. But I will think back on Sasha Kljestan's career, both with club and country, but especially with clubs, yeah. as being extremely positive and fun to watch.
Does anyone else get the sense he might make a good coach? Because I do with Kljestan.
Coach or even like broadcaster. He did some social media, like Fox is doing a Twitter show during the World Cup, and he was on those shows, and from what I saw, did do a good job, and that show was a lot more fun than the rest of their coverage that they did, and sort of loose. So I don't know. I think he's definitely got a future in the game if he wants it.
Yeah. I mean, he's a nice guy by all accounts. I spoke to him a number of times, as I say, when I used to cover that team, and he'd always say hello and he'd have time for you and he'd always give you an interesting quote. So Joe, I could definitely see a broadcast career for him at some point in the future.
Very nice indeed. Thank you very much, Robert, for that question. By the way, as is my wont to drop names, I went to the supermarket last night by my house, and speaking of well facial haired attacking midfielders, Mattia Zaccagni of Lazio was in the supermarket. It was quite funny. He was trying to do his shopping, and every sort of 5 yards or so, someone would stop him with a kid and have his photo taken with him. It was very obliging. It was very sweet to see.
Did you ask for a picture, Ryan?
I did, yes, yes. And then I asked him why he broke my window while I was away.
Did he have the Lazio Falcon with him, just helping him with the shopping?
I think, yeah, because it's like, you know, if you had like a school like gerbil where you got to take it home every weekend, a different kid, they did the same with the eagle at Lazio. So I don't know if it was his weekend this weekend, but
sure.
Yeah, he had the claw marks on his shoulder. Yeah.
That's the telltale sign.
Okay, let's move on to a question from Tom Carpenter, because Taylor's looking distinctly unamused with this riff.
Taylor didn't know who you were talking about, and I will tell you that Google, when I tried to type the name you said, told me that that wasn't a thing. So now I know who it is, but I would encourage people to, based on what Ryan said, try to type that name if you don't know who they are and see just how wrong you were when you tried to type it in.
Mattia Zaccagni, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, if I'm honest.
I heard it as Zaccagni, which is where I got confused. Zaccagni? That's where I went down a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Zaccagni, I have no idea.
I think you got it right.
Pay more attention to how Italian things are said, I suppose, is the lesson here, Taylor. Yeah. Anywho, Todd Carpenter says there's talk about trying to get Jesse Marsh out from Leeds for the USMNT.
People are talking.
Lots of people are saying it's around the water cooler at this moment, Tay-Tay. But would Ralph Rangnick be an option if we wanted to go that style if Mr. Marsh doesn't work out? Taylor, what do you think about this one? Obviously, RR, as I'm now calling him, is Austria coach at the moment. Terrific spell with Man United preceding that. What are your thoughts?
Like, honestly, removing the Manchester United aspect of things, because I still don't know what to make of that. My answer is I don't think so. I think he's a very good manager, and I think will be good for Austria. I think he will be good for a lot of teams. I think there are two things that when you add them together, I'm not sure they would work. Number one, I think he is pretty set in what he wants and how he wants things to go. And that is not a criticism, because it has worked for him. He's been very successful. But I don't think he has shown himself willing to be flexible based on what he has at his disposal. A good quote I saw, Rangnick's search for control, even in chaos, is reflected in his character. The qualified teacher is meticulous, but also steadfast in his approach. It is always clear that he is the man in charge. In some ways, that is exactly what you want as a coach, be it at club or national team level. But I think a thing we have talked about many, many times with Greg Berhalter and national team coaches before him in the U.S. is flexibility and the ability to make the most with what you have. And I think the idea of a person who hasn't spent much time in the United States, who I don't know how connected he is to the youth, coming in and saying, this is how it's going to be, this is how we're playing, I don't want any... like sort of, I will brook no dissent. I don't know if that is going to get the best out of this particular group of players. I mean, we have a very high profile example of a player being told you're not going to play very much and how that played out. So I think in that way, it's basically, I think it's a cultural contrast combined with a philosophical contrast that could spell problems. I think if we had a more established group of players who were more about like, yep, whatever the coach says, we're going to play that way, that's how it's going to work. But I just don't think that's been the U.S.'s ideology for a long time. I think the U.S. has been about a camp of players who like each other, who like playing together, and oftentimes coaches who I think give some control to those players. And then you could argue sometimes it's too much control to the players. But I think there is more of a back and forth. There is more of a flexible relationship there and has been for the U.S. That's at least my takeaway. I look forward to Graham and Joe completely disagreeing.
No, I would agree with pretty much all of that, Taylor. The only slight thing I would disagree with is you said that Raniak is a good manager. I think he has been a good manager. I'm not convinced right now he's a good manager. It feels like maybe that time has passed. I go back to his spell at Manchester United. It felt like he was heralded as this tactical pioneer, which may be true. He has inspired coaches like Jürgen Klopp and a lot of German coaches. But actually, when it was his turn to put a team on the pitch, it felt a little bit outdated, actually. And he hasn't coached, or he hadn't coached before going to Manchester United for a good number of years. And Austria haven't exactly been brilliant since he took over either. I think they had a good result in his first game that made everyone sit up on Twitter and go, oh, well, Man United were the problem. And then actually the results since then have been poor. If you told me that US soccer were interested in hiring Raniak in a sporting director role, I think I might have a different opinion of that. That's the job that Manchester United should have appointed Raniak to instead of head coach. That's where Raniak still has some value even as he gets a bit older. And a lot of the comments that he made at Manchester United have aged really well. And a lot of the things that he was pushing for behind the scenes at Manchester United, according to a lot of the reporting, there's been a lot of good stories from Laurie Whitwell at The Athletic about this, about what Raniak wanted. That has also aged very well. So it seems like he is very good at identifying problems and suggesting solutions. So if it's a solution of Raniak as a sporting director and then Marsh as the head coach, I know Todd makes a choice between the two, I say, let's just have both of them. Let's just go full Red Bull and give the US wings.
Why not, indeed? Joe, your thoughts?
Wings would help. Yeah, wings would help a lot, actually. I'm not sure you need a striker if you've got wings, for at least somebody. Give Weston McKennie wings and see how that goes. Yeah, I don't love the idea of Rangnick as a manager. I'm a little bit scarred by the Man United thing, and I agree with a lot of what Graham said. I think maybe things have passed him by a little bit. But even the other aspect here is the stylistic change that going with a Rangnick or even a Jesse Marsh would indicate for the U.S. kind of feels like a waste then. If you immediately throw an Uno reverse card and you're flipping back the other way, away from possession, and you're just trying to play vertical and press all the time, I'm not sure that's a bad idea, actually, in this cycle. And maybe I should not pull a sunk cost fallacy here, but I do think there is some value in the style that the U.S. started to build over the last, 4 years now, since 2019. I think there is a lot of merit to that. I don't think it's perfect. I think they need a lot of help in the final third. And that's what I'm helping the next coach. That's what I'm hoping the next coach will help them build, is basically add the cherry on top to the style that's already been built that I think can effectively help the team navigate CONCACAF and navigate tournaments and even, go toe-to-toe with some of the best teams in the world at the World Cup. You still need to be flexible. But I would rather not throw the baby out with the bathwater. If we see a managerial change, I would rather see, at least right now, and maybe things change in my mind between now and when we have a hire, I would rather see the U.S. kind of develop and iterate on what they've already built over the last X number of years.
All right. Thank you very much, Todd, for the question. Let's take another quick break and a couple more after this one.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Hey folks, this is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Here's a question from Aaron Moats. Assuming the USMNT will send a B team to the 2023 Gold Cup, who would you like to see and why? Aaron says he would send a lot of players in contention for the 24 Olympic team roster. Graham, your thoughts on this one? Gold Cup, of course, coming up this summer. I know it's circled in your calendar. CONCACAF's finest competing. Plus, of course, Qatar. Invited once again.
Of course, because why not? In terms of what players I would like to see at that tournament, I guess a general theme would be players who obviously weren't involved in the World Cup.
Why do you already sound annoyed by this? Like, I guess we'll do it. Is this just you not wanting the Olympics to happen?
I mean, I am not an Olympic. Yeah, this is, I'm not an Olympics fan, and I am neutral on the Gold Cup. Is that not just the general stance, the general consensus on the Gold Cup? I mean, I guess I'll watch it if I have to.
There we go.
Graham, serious question: do you not like the Olympics because Scotland compete as Great Britain, and you have resentment for the rest of the nation?
Yes, okay. That is the reason. Okay. No, it's not the only reason. It's just like school sports day, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to minimise the athletic achievement of people who are much better than me, but
in the same way that soccer is just the playground every lunchtime at my school. Yeah, yeah.
I guess with the Olympics, I just get annoyed that people all of a sudden become experts in sports that they know nothing about overnight.
I've made a career out of that, Graham.
Yeah, well, same for myself. Yeah, that's what I've done for the last few years, the last 10 years,
Bad technique on the hurdles there. Got to be better. I mean, if you're claiming by that much, like, it's just too much.
I mean, exactly. You're joking, but that people start to talk like that about sports that they watch once every 4 years. So that's a big part of the reason I'm not a massive fan of the Olympics. As I say, neutral on the Gold Cup. So some players that I would like to see at that tournament, Malik Tillman. There is a player in there. There are moments of brilliance from him every so often. I have questions about his intensity or his lack thereof, particularly in matches where he doesn't see a lot of the ball, and I don't think his Champions League performances were up to much this season, but the US will be the dominant side in plenty Gold Cup matches, or you would hope so. So I guess that tournament could suit him well. I'll give you a couple other names before I pass the mic. Jack McGlynn. I think if the US is going to improve that midfield unit before 2026, it feels like he's a good candidate to make that happen. He's got good work rate, his passing game is tidy, so I could see him working well in the US team. And then Daryl Dike, I would like to see him back. I know, has he played since the last Gold Cup, which was a big storyline for that tournament, him coming into that team. There was a lot of excitement and hype around him. Injuries have been a problem for him really since that tournament. He's not played a great deal for the US, but he is playing for West Brom right now and doing relatively well. So I guess let's give him a chance to make up for some lost time.
Joe, your thoughts on the players who should be in contention for the Gold Cup?
Okay, so I want to back up like a half step first. If listeners didn't know when the Gold Cup is, like I didn't really know when the dates were before I started doing prep for this show, I'll drop those now. So the Gold Cup is going to be from June 24th to July 16th. the Nations League, the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal and final, which the U.S. has not qualified for yet, I believe, but almost certainly will after the March window. Those games are going to be sometime probably in early June. So this is the premise of the question here from Aaron, is that there's two tournaments. It's unlikely, although not impossible. Mexico did it last time around, two summers ago. I don't remember when that was. But they sent their A team to both tournaments. The U.S. last time around, the last time we had these two competitions, Peralta sent an A team to the Nations League and like a B-ish team to the Gold Cup. So I do think that's likely to happen again. So I've got most of the top guys going to the Nations League, the European players. That way there's fewer games for them after a long season, and you get to look at more players over an extended period in the Gold Cup. So that's just the background foundation stuff. Some other players that I would like to see. Graham, I love the Malik Tillman shout. He's on my list. I love the Daryl Dike shout. He's on my list. McGlynn's not, because the U20 World Cup finishes just a couple of weeks before the Gold Cup, and I think he's going to be there. Maybe he'll be at both, but I'm not sure about that. So I've got some other midfielders. Eric Williamson, I want to see. I'd like to see him start a bunch of games. Keaton Parks, kind of the same deal. Aiden Morris at the number six. Taylor Booth, just anywhere in midfield. He's doing well in the Eredivisie right now. I would love to see all of those guys. I'd love to see Austin Trusty and Miles Robinson as the starting center backs for this team. Robinson should be healthy by then. I think we should see him in MLS even before that tournament. Had dealt with an Achilles injury that took him out of the World Cup. I'd like to see him playing, and that's why I'd send him to the Gold Cup rather than the Nations League. And then Austin Trusty has been doing well in the championship. I want to see him. And then Gaga Slonina. I would love to see him start as the goalkeeper in this tournament. Maybe that's not the right thing to do, but I'm not sure how much he'll have been playing for Chelsea. I'm not sure he's going to get many looks at all this season. Maybe he gets a loan later in January and will have been playing and will have been playing well. I would like to see Slonina in this team. I have a bunch of other picks, but Taylor, I want to hear some of yours.
I've got three more for you. I think Gianluca Busio would be interesting. We haven't seen a ton of him, but has been playing in Italy, and I think to see him as a more veteran player, if we're not going to call in the veteran players, would be interesting. Ricardo Pepi, I think if he's not going to be with the Nations League team, then to make sure he's involved, make sure he's still interested in playing, I think would be good. And then I think, as we talked about previously, Joe, I think just calling in Florian Balogun, even though he's probably not going to take it, even though he's probably not going to accept it, just keep calling him in. Keep letting him know we're interested. Keep letting him know we're around. Maybe don't be too desperate. Don't send flowers or anything, but just be like, hey, you know, like, we're going to be doing something later if you want to hang out, and just see if he's casually into it. That's the way to go.
I like it. I like it a lot. You up? Just hit him with a you up.
Exactly. You up? Want to play for the U.S. in the Gold Cup? Question mark. Is that too extra?
No, I think that's a very normal text to send to another human.
Don't tell him it's the Gold Cup. Just take the tact that I think it was a Vegas TV station took when they said the U.S. had won the World Cup when they beat Mexico in that final last year or the year before, whenever that was.
All right. So you up? Question mark. Basically. Gonna kick around later. Period. And then we send that.
Perfect. Parentheses, although not at the Gold Cup.
I think I'm reliably informed that I guess only old people include punctuation in their texts, but I can't not conclude a sentence with a period, so that's my own thing.
Does that tell you something, Taylor, or
what, that I'm an old now? Yes,
oh,
it does.
I don't know, maybe.
Look at the one young person coming at us, Taylor. I'm grouping myself with you here.
Hey, I'm barely in my 30s. Am I not young? What am I?
You're in your 30s. like us two. Different end of it, but hey. Anywho, thank you, Aaron, for that question. One final question for this episode from Andy Mullio. Here we go. To support women's soccer and soccer in general in the US, I propose, says Andy, an exhibition game of the USMNT and USWNT playing England's men's and women's national teams. So here's how we'd structure it. 26 players per squad, 13 men and 13 women. On the field, you have to have 5 women and 5 men at the same time. The first half, you have a male goalie. The second half, a female goalkeeper. 5 subs per side. Men coming on for men, women coming on for women. What do you think? Would this work? Would this be a good game to play? To answer those three questions briefly for me, Taylor, don't like it, no.
Wait, be a little more informative. Why don't you like it?
I just don't think it would work very well. Do you think there's a world where this format
this
would
be
actually
pure chaos, and I want it.
Yeah? Is it
I
good
mean,
chaos?
I think it'd be the same thing as like a testimonial or like a friendly when you get like the Brazil 2002 team playing again for some reason. Like I don't think it would be taken as a very competitive game. So, like, it would work in the sense that you could do that and play 90 minutes of soccer and abide by those rules. I think it would be
interesting. Just clarify, are we talking about 52 players being on the pitch at one time?
No, 26-player squad, but five men, five women, and a goalkeeper.
I like Graham's idea.
All that. Yeah, or just make the pitch twice as big. Why not? Let's do that.
Right, so hold on. So it's 13 versus 13.
The squad has to be 13 men, 13 women. But then you have five men on the pitch, five women on the pitch, and then the substitutions are if you're taking off Christian Pulisic, you have to bring on Tim Way. If you're taking off Mallory Pugh, you have to bring on Midge Purse. It's like you can't sort of.
So how many players are on the pitch
that?
At 11 any given
on each
time?
Side, Graham.
Just 22. Oh, this is disappointing. I thought we were having 26 a side, which is what the question says. 26 players a side. I thought it was 52 players on the football pitch at the one time, which is why I was so in favor
of
this. But
I like Graham's idea better. I agree with Ryan. I don't think it's going to produce a good game. If it's a testimonial, like Taylor's talking about, and everybody's just kind of having a laugh, then it's fine. I just don't love the mechanics of splitting the teams like this. I don't think it's going to flow very well. I think it's going to look strange in terms of how the game is played. So I don't love the execution, but I think the idea is fun. And whenever we get questions like this, I always come back to the same thing. Actually, now I'm coming back to two things. One is Graham's idea of putting 52 players on the field at the same time to see what happens. The other idea is just futsal. Play a futsal game, do fives and have a couple of each on the field at the same time. Everybody wants to see the skill moves anyway. That's the fun part of these kinds of games. So it's more balanced. There's a smaller field. You could still broadcast it on TV. Like, I'm sure somebody would pick this up if it was planned well. And then you get to see, you know, Rose Lavelle nutmeg somebody. And that's fun. That's what I want to see, at least. And I'd rather see that happen 8 times in a game than, like, twice. So,
as long as it's not my John Stones, I couldn't be having that, Joe.
Bad news, Ryan. It is John Stones. I just checked.
You said, Joe, this is a fun idea, but I also would be concerned about the conversation this would inspire. The chat online when this game would happen, I don't think would be particularly positive and healthy.
Well, I mean, you can't not do things because people are going to say stupid stuff online, first of all, because then nobody would do anything.
We wouldn't do our show, I guess, yeah.
I do think that discourse would be minimized. The comparisons between men and women playing soccer would be minimized with sort of the five-a-side. Like, it's a better, in my mind at least, it's a better and more even playing field where you get to see cool stuff from everyone. Because these players, you know, men's national team, women's national team, whatever, are, like, so skilled. They're so good in tight spaces. They're elite at that stuff. And so I think that's why the futsal court is a much better better arena for this kind of thing than, like, a full field.
There is a growing trend in sports in general of mixed competition. So, tennis comparison here, Taylor. I know you love those.
Love them.
The United Cup is. I presume you've been watching loads of the United Cup in Australia. I know you've been tuned to that.
Guys, I know it looks
closely.
Like my eyes are glazed over and I'm not really listening anymore. But no, go ahead, continue on.
Sorry.
That's just how you look when you're very concentrated. Mm-hmm.
Can I interrupt very briefly? Sasha Kljestan just became a broadcaster for MLS under Apple. They just released that. I didn't know that when I said it earlier, but I'm covering my tracks for listeners who have already seen that news. When I suggested that was just me throwing a dart at the wall. I was right, as it turns out, but
made it happen, Joe.
Will he only be a successful broadcaster if he's got a mustache?
I don't know. Like, I think we should ask Taylor. I think we should ask Taylor that question.
All right, maybe that was a conversation we had off air, but please continue, Graham.
Yeah, so there is a trend of mixed competitions. United Cup in Australia has been pretty popular. I think this is the first year it's happened, where you have, like, countries competing against each other, and the teams are made up of men and women players. So I guess it wouldn't be too surprising to see some form of exhibition competition in that mold moving forward. I just don't really know. I'm with Joe. I think a futsal tournament would be fun, and I would like to see that happen over anything else, I think.
Taylor, any closing thoughts on this one? Is it a wonderful idea?
I mean, I think, like, experimental games are always interesting, and you could definitely make it fun, but I don't think it's going to be, like, a competitive thing or anything like that. I think it would just be, like, a fun kick around. I like the idea of doing the futsal tournament, and you have like a set number of captains who draft from a fixed player pool. I think that could be cool to see who picks and how much bitterness there would be. I also like the idea of having the U.S. men play the England men on one pitch, and then perpendicular to that, the U.S. women are playing the England women, and then you have them, that midfield area is hotly contested, and you got to pay attention to two different balls at once. Let's just go full chaos and see what happens.
Oh, boy. King Peach with the hot takes once again on Total Soccer Show. Andy, thank you very much for that question. I'm not sure if we succinctly answered whether it would work or be good, but
we did
an interesting...
not.
Yeah, we didn't. But hey, such is life. And we had fun discussing it, did we not? Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much for your discussion and for all you do.
As always, it's the friends we made along the way.
Indeed. Friends such as Joe Lowry. Thank you very much, Joe.
Aw, thanks, Ryan.
And Graham Ruthven, pleasure as always, my darling.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back. Thank you, listener, for joining us. We'll be back on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye!